Welcome to MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex,
Hi,
and with me, as usual, is James. You can check out our website, themacguffinman.com. We most recently talked about Primer and Upstream Color, the two Shane Carruth movies. And before slash after that, we talked about The Night Of. I also wrote a thing about Rob Reiner's career that will be up on the website a couple days after this podcast, so you can check that out if you are like 65 and really love movies. But yeah, themacguffinman.com. Also follow us on Twitter, at themacguffinman. And yeah, tell your friends. All right, thanks.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. And now, here are Alex and James.
James, I just love democracy and just want everybody to believe in it. What are we talking about here today, James?
Well, to anyone who has seen Snowden, they will know we are talking about Snowden.
Snowden and Citizen 4, the Laura Poitras documentary that I think we can probably agree right off the bat is a better movie than Snowden.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I think like what will happen is we'll talk about Snowden and then Citizen 4 will kind of make its way in there, you know, just because they are about the same subject in different ways, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, we've done podcasts about one or two or three movies at the same time or about a career. I don't think we've done the same story covered in two kind of markedly different ways.
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of I think I mentioned the idea for this podcast like months ago on the podcast, just because it seemed like Snowden was definitely going to show exactly what happens in Citizen 4, but also do the sort of womb to tomb biopic sort of thing. So it was, I don't know, it just seemed like an interesting way to discuss reality or the version of reality that exists within documentary film and also Oliver Stone's version of reality, like simultaneously. I feel like it could have been fun. And as I was sitting through Snowden thinking about Citizen 4 the whole time, it was fun. You know?
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, the fact that you describe watching Snowden and sitting through it, I think tips your hand on your feelings about Snowden. Yeah. There's a few things here because it's, I don't think it's as traditional as a biopic as maybe you made it sound right there. Also, Oliver Stone, of all directors, kind of has his own interpretation on historical events.
Yeah,
I mean, I think a big touchstone for a lot of people with Oliver Stone is JFK, which is kind of right out there, you know. It's really embraces a lot of conspiracy theories, and that was made in the 90s, and a lot of those things haven't stuck even to this point.
Yeah,
some things he chases down in that story I don't think are part of the way anyone even looks at the JFK story now.
Yeah, for sure. And that movie also comes out like right at the height of Oliver Stone's prime. Like, he had just won two Best Director Oscars like in 87 and 89, I think, for Wall Street and Born on the 4th of July. And I think JFK is him parlaying that into putting all of his crazy in one basket and making JFK. So yeah, but I mean, we are just kind of, you're right. But we're all, it also feels like a different kind of Oliver Stone. Like, it really does feel like an older Oliver Stone is making Snowden, you know? It does.
Like a reined in pre-Oscar Oliver Stone? Is that what you mean?
No. Like a sedated Oliver Stone. I think Snowden is just like a boring and, like, I don't think it's bad in the way that I find most Oliver Stone movies, but like, it kind of made me miss how much I hated old Oliver Stone movies, you know?
Okay, well, extrapolate that by saying what you mean by bad Oliver Stone or old Oliver Stone.
Well, so Oliver Stone movies typically are just very, they're kind of like abrasive movies and very in your face, and there's a lot of characters shouting exactly what Oliver Stone wants you to think about the movie at one time. I think a good example of that within Snowden is when Ed Snowden's at the backyard bonfire and talking about the Nuremberg trials. Like, that's sort of something that used to happen in Oliver Stone movies way more frequently, you know? It seemed to be like every other scene was something like that. Somebody talking about the horrors of Vietnam and Platoon, and then somebody else talking about the horrors of Vietnam and Platoon immediately after, you know?
And kind of essentially outside of the narrative.
Yeah.
You know, like something that people in Vietnam wouldn't talk about this because everyone would know, but This is such like a direct-to-camera kind of thing, you mean?
Yeah, kind of. It's just, and it's not like, because there's a difference. Obviously, I don't expect all of my movies to sound like reality, because almost none of them do. In the best case scenario, I want them to just be like entertaining versions that get across some sort of idea that the filmmaker wants me to think about, or the filmmakers want me to think about. But I never want it to feel like Oliver Stone is sticking his head in front of the camera and telling me what to think about it, which is something that I think runs rampant throughout what would be considered Oliver Stone's best work. And like a lot of the things that he does in editing and shooting his movies are just very kind of abrasive. Like he'll do lots of weird cutaway shots to like a dude, a silhouette with a hat just sitting in the stands on any given Sunday,
or a shot of planet Earth in any given Sunday.
Exactly. Or say, I think there's like a moment in Wall Street where Gordon Gekko says something particularly foreboding, and there's just this giant thunderclap that comes in out of nowhere, you know? And like those are tropes that are used in a lot of movies, but Oliver Stone really, really takes it to the next level, you know? So I don't know. There's just something about his style that's never really stuck with me. And, I guess that's putting it mildly, but,
some of the most directing versus best directing kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He makes Adam McKay look, look very relaxed by comparison. So yeah, it's just, but the thing about Snowden was like, it just kind of felt boring. Like, there were parts where like the old Oliver Stone was like trying to peek his head through, and it just didn't work. I don't know why. Like, I feel like I like this movie more, but I would have had more fun if I actually hated this movie, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I kind of just walked away with sort of a middling opinion on it, which was the last thing I kind of expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like that's, and I think that's kind of the way people felt about W. I wanted to watch W again just to check in, because I remember I liked that movie. But I mean, it's been 8 years since I've seen it, but I didn't have time to. But that I was looking through or thinking about Oliver Stone's filmography and trying to think of the movies he's made that I actually like. And it was like W, Any Given Sunday. And I bet Wall Street is entertaining, you know, like... But that's kind of it for me, you know, as far as him as a director.
Yeah, so, I think Platoon's better than you give it credit
yeah,
for.
Yeah, oh, everybody thinks Platoon's better than I give it credit for. I think everybody's wrong. It's not the first time I've thought that about something.
And what about Citizen Four?
Citizen Four is a great movie. That's the weirdest thing about the Snowden and Citizen Four comparison is that Citizen Four feels more intense. Like, it's more... It feels more like a thrilling movie than Snowden does, even though Snowden is able to kind of take more liberties with what it's doing. Like those foreboding shots of the tunnel that starts off Citizen Four, and then the car eventually pulling through it. It's just this. It's a really. I mean, I know it's cinema anyway if it's a documentary, but it is a really cinematic documentary. Like, it really feels like there is less of a gap between a narrative film and Citizen Four. In the sort of feel of it, you know?
Yeah, and so I think what you're getting at is that with documentaries, we kind of expect that unless they do the dramatizations, you know, and go that route.
The Errol Morris thing.
Yeah, we've got, you know, a certain point of view, you know, a limited point of view, and a certain time frame that it's shot in. And Citizen Four, I mean, that's, we're not looking at a very long period of time,
no.
Which I think is what kind of makes it so incredible is that
the chunk of it, like, I feel like there's more time like the stuff that doesn't involve Snowden, you know, that takes place over more time, but the stuff
at the end
and the beginning with Bill Winnie, is that his name?
Yeah.
Like that could have been shot pretty much any time, you know?
Yeah. So I think with a documentary like that, where you kind of look at them with accepting the fact that it's a certain time period, a certain framework, other than archival footage from CNN or, you know, the hearings that Winnie undergoes, you know, you're working kind of limited, and to make that something thrilling and entertaining is harder to do. And you kind of take those movies with a grain of salt. Whereas when you take the Snowden route, the movie Snowden, you can film him as a child if you want. I mean, your actor as a, you know, playing him as a child, playing him, as we see you know, going through the military, trying to become special forces, all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't come together. But, well, I mean, something I mentioned earlier is that, would you really call Snowden a biopic? I mean, we do have a little bit of him, you know, as I said, trying to join special forces and failing, him meeting his girlfriend years before really the meat of the Snowden story, the way that we think about Snowden being, you know, yes, in the Citizen Four frame, you know, Hong Kong to Russia era of his life. We don't get, I mean, you use the frame womb to tomb. We don't see the tomb. We don't see the womb. It's pretty limited, really.
It is, but like it's limited kind of because, one, Snowden is still really young. I think he's 33 now. And also basically the only thing, like when you accept that the subject is so young, the only thing Oliver Stone skips in the standard biopic formula is showing one defining event from his childhood, like Ray Charles' brother getting killed or something like that, you know? Yeah. So there isn't that. I will agree with that. But it's still, it kind of feels like a modern version of the biopic sort of thing, like where you're right. It's not womb to tomb. That's not the proper way to describe it. But it does sort of still play in that same sandbox, just in a different corner, you know, like there, it's still showing us the basically Snowden becoming the person that is able to walk out of the NSA with over a million documents or however many it was in total. And that's sort of the biopic portion of it that we're getting. And it covers, I think probably it's got to cover 9 years at least. And those are still the very defining years of his life, right? Like even when you do see a biopic, most of the story takes place within that sort of time period, or that length of time period, and then you get like a montage, and then you get like an epilogue, you know?
Yeah.
So the Snowden story just doesn't have the montage. Well, we get the montage. We don't really have an epilogue yet. I think the epilogue for his biopic would be whether or not he gets pardoned, or like text on screen, Snowden was never pardoned, you know, for jumping ahead 50 years.
Yeah, that's just the nature of what's actually happened. We're not provided with an epilogue, or Oliver Stone wouldn't have the chance, really, right?
Exactly. So I do think it's still very much a biopic, but there are ways that it does sort of subvert the very boring like chronology of the standard biopic, just in the fact that, you know, the film kind of moves in two different ways in that, I think does our introduction to Snowden happen in Hong Kong while they're waiting for the spicy lunch or whatever? Is that
the first time you see him.
Okay. So like we've got that story, and then we flash back to the story that's building up to that meeting, right? So yeah, you're right that it doesn't follow the rules of the biopic that I continually call boring, but it's definitely not like I'm not there or something, you know?
Yeah. No. Well. So. A few things on that. I mean, do you think part of it is Snowden, and you see this more in Citizen Four than in the movie Snowden, do you think Edward Snowden doesn't provide that because he doesn't want to be the central figure of this movement? You know, there seems to be a definite thread in Citizen Four that, you know, he's going to put forth his identity at some point, but...
And he'll give biographical information to Glenn Greenwald for Greenwald to have background, but on the idea that he doesn't actually publish it, you know?
Yeah, it's his personality is not part of it. He wants to come forward and have his name and face out there so other people in similar positions don't feel bad about, I mean, aren't apprehensive about coming forward the way that he did. But I mean, do you think part of that is him kind of communicating that to Oliver Stone and not wanting his childhood or some, you know, as you said, some early incident being part of what forms it?
I can't imagine it being that interesting. Like, I bet Oliver Stone did the research and then just because he's known for his meticulous research and just was like, this doesn't help the movie, you know, because it seems like his childhood was relatively... would be relatively boring in a movie. Basically, the only thing that they could have dramatized is I think Edward Snowden's grandfather was in the Pentagon in 9/11. Like that could have been used as like a defining moment from his youth, right? But also just in the way we still get that these defining moments slowly throughout the story that Stone was already telling. So I see where you're coming from. I don't think Oliver Stone would have, because I don't think Oliver Stone talked to Edward Snowden until the movie was pretty much done. So I don't think Snowden had influence on that. But also, or I guess not until the movie was pretty much done, but until probably till the script was pretty much done. But so I don't think Snowden had that much influence on skipping the childhood, but Oliver Stone probably found that he wasn't that interested in it anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, now that you say that, there definitely is a way to dress up him finding out, you know, on 9/11 that his grandfather's in the Pentagon. And I mean, those scenes wouldn't have added much.
No.
So it's, I think in that way, they kind of dodged a bullet.
If anything, they could have shown him become like super patriotic. And then, which, you know, at the beginning of the movie, Snowden is still, I mean, it's debatably still a patriotic person, but like in the sort of conservative style of patriotism is where we find him at the beginning, you know? He just believes that America is good and that America does good things, you know?
Yeah, so did you kind of walk away with the same feeling that they didn't do the childhood thing, but you still kind of have the, and maybe this is just the fact that maybe it was just a disjointed movie, but you kind of have these three stories, you know, you've got Snowden's kind of discovery of the way things are. Mm-hmm. You've got his relationship with Lindsay, and then you have, you know, kind of the Citizen Four third of the movie, him trying to get the info out. Do you think, since these are, you know, we've had these in thirds, one of those thirds would be the childhood one in a different biopic?
Yeah.
And you think they kind of achieve it in a different way just by focusing on different elements of his life? And do you think that's kind of a negative thing, that they don't feel like one consistent story and character? Or do you think that's the biopic vibe?
No, I actually think the arc of the movie that they chose to follow, I think that was a smart choice. Like, I like the idea of this very patriotic person sort of, I mean, so patriotic that he feels that he needs to join the army, you know? And him sort of starting to slowly realize that the country is not as it seems, and then being pushed so far by what he's learning to actually want to steal things from it. And and I think that's an interesting arc. I just thought it, like, the structure of the movie is, I think, relatively smart. I just thought it was just, there's just something about the movie that just feels, it just doesn't feel, I don't know, there's nothing exciting about it, you know? It's I don't think that there were, the problem with this movie comes from the structure or the basic you know, the basic idea of how they built the story. I just think that the execution is just kind of half asleep, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because obviously the story is fascinating. I mean, I think without Citizen Four, I think I would still say this is an incredible story. And when I heard that Oliver Stone didn't want to do this movie for a little bit, I mean, that blows my mind. It sounds like the most Oliver Stone story that could ever be imagined, right? So yeah, how does it miss?
Maybe Oliver Stone just doesn't have it. I think that might be it. Like, he might have just lost it. Like, you lose your fastball sometime. And miraculously, some older directors, it hasn't happened. Like Martin Scorsese, it's never happened for him. He's had some duds, but he's still a genius. And same with Spielberg. And there's just something about Oliver Stone that, I mean, you can argue that, like, Any Given Sunday is kind of the last movie that he made that really feels like an Oliver Stone movie. And even that sort of feels like a transition into the later career Oliver Stone. But I don't know. It just, I think my take is that he just isn't, there's something that just happened and he's just not as sharp as he used to be, or he's just not as good at his job as he used to be. Maybe he doesn't work as hard anymore. Who knows? Like, there's just, this just happens sometimes when as people age, they just get worse at their job, you know?
Yeah. So if you compare Snowden to Citizen Four, how would you say that the movies, both of those movies, do a good job of portraying what can be a very boring story? I mean, a lot of this is, I imagine the difficulties that the filmmakers would have with both of these stories, that it's a lot of tactical information. It's a lot of sitting in front of computer screens or sitting in hotel rooms. And there is a constant threat. I mean, one thing I love about Citizen Four is when the fire alarm goes off and then one of them kind of half makes a joke that this is how they're going to, you know, this is the government trying to flush them out of the room so they can get them. And then they kind of laugh and they realize, no, that's like, that's a fairly plausible solution to how they would get them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is always this constant threat. Someone might kick down the door. Someone might fake a fire alarm so that they can, you know, just apprehend them more easily and not in their room, which might be dangerous. How do you think these movies do a good job of making those kind of vague threats seem real and a lot of the technical information easy to grasp?
I don't know about the technical information. I feel like I'll abstain from that part of the question just because I felt like, and maybe this is just how I watch movies, but I did a little bit of research after seeing Citizen Four and read a bit more because I feel like it didn't totally come across, even in Citizen Four, which I would say is the better movie of the two. But I don't know if you remember the John Oliver interview with Edward Snowden, but like a big part of his argument with his interview with Snowden was that like Snowden didn't explain it to people in a way that they could understand, and that his eyes just sort of gloss over whenever Snowden starts talking about technical details. And John Oliver, obviously a very smart person. And I'm no dummy, but there are some things about just technical language that I will just gloss over. It's like, if you start talking about math, I'm just not going to listen to you, you know? And that's an idiocy block that I have. And so it goes, but like I did research after, so I liked the movie well enough to do that. But so I don't think they get the technical stuff across well enough to dum-dums such as myself. But that's fine. You know, they made me interested enough to want to read more. But as far as making Citizen Four sort of like this engaging movie, there is this real sort of the thing that Poitras, the director of Citizen Four, does a lot throughout the movie is shoot footage that looks kind of like surveillance footage, but like high quality surveillance footage of I think it's an NSA site being built in Utah at the very beginning, where it's just these long shots of construction on this building that's being built to continue what Edward Snowden's trying to stop with this information that he's releasing. And, you know, we get shots of other buildings like that as well. And eventually we get a shot of Edward Snowden in Russia with Lindsay Mills. That also feels like surveillance, you know, and
through the window for outside.
Yeah, exactly. While they're making pasta or something. Seems to be a real trend.
Perfectly this time.
Yes. But that's something that is a visual thing that continues throughout the movie. And I think the use of music in Citizen Four is really great in that the music is basically not musical in any capacity. It's just sort of this technological hum, and you only get like to the point where you could really call it a music cue at the very end when they cut to black, and this very sort of Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross type of score really like drives home the end of the movie. It just sort of like it builds to this thing that had been existing throughout so many scenes, this just like light hum of music that exists in a lot of the movie that is very foreboding and sounds like kind of terrifying, you know?
Yeah. What did you think of the cinematography in Snowden? Because I kind of felt the same thing. They had a few shots that were kind of just a little bit further away than what you would normally go for to kind of convey that sense of voyeurism.
Yeah, a little bit. I just sort of, I don't know. I think my takeaway from the cinematography of Snowden is that it didn't feel like there was a cohesive idea. Like, I concur that, yes, there are some shots like that. I don't think that necessarily Oliver Stone was and Anthony Don Mantle, the cinematographer, were having conversations about how can we make this look like surveillance footage all the time. There are parts where they do that, but I don't know. It didn't work as a cohesive whole. And there are so many moments in the movie that just seem really like slapdash directed, you know, like just... Just throw the camera on handheld and we'll just see what happens sort of thing. And the editing doesn't really cut together. I don't know. It just doesn't work, you know, it doesn't feel right.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a couple of specific visual questions about Snowden. Giant Corbin face.
Oh boy.
you're gonna pass on that one.
I think that was an answer. I think, oh boy, was an answer.
I still like Corbin a lot in this, though.
I mean, Risa Founds is a good actor. Okay. Everybody's on board with that, dude.
Okay, good. Before we move on, do you want to elucidate any further on that shot? I mean, it just seems...
I mean, he's named O'Brien after a character in 1984, and then he becomes Big Brother. You know, like
super
it's
surveillance phase.
Yeah, and exactly. Okay. And just a giant figure of what you were afraid of, basically. So,
okay. Yeah. Now the scene when Stone's describing, you know, following everyone's connections. You know,
yes. And it ends up becoming an eye.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. It's. I mean, it's a few things. It kind of starts by, you know, what looks like a very technical, you know, diagram about data being transmitted, and then looks kind of like a planet. And, you know, we just don't see any human faces for a little bit, or the ones that we do are, you know,
it's
what
people Snapchatting.
Yeah, what we see through a webcam or Snapchat and things like that. And then that description of, you know, by the time it's a third connection from anybody, it's the entire world. What about that scene? I mean, that seemed like a very Oliver Stone kind of thing, and I know that you're not always on board with that. I thought that was a sequence that kind of worked. And
I think you can take the kind of out. I think that sequence works very well. That's I think the as far as directorial highlights of the movie, that's it, 100%. Because I thought that worked really well, and you don't sort of come to the conclusion that it's going to turn into an eye before the end of the sequence, and. It's great. Like it simultaneously explained a lot while also being, you know, a visual representation of that explanation, you know?
Yeah. And being visually engaging.
100%.
Yeah. I think that's, that's, you know, we talk about Oliver Stone being kind of most directory and making these kind of big, obvious choices. But I thought that was one that was in his wheelhouse and that I thought he hit out of the park.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree entirely.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not saying like everything in this movie is done terribly, but I think just more often than not, it just doesn't feel. I don't know. There's just a lackadaisical feel that exists throughout most of it, but there are still parts that are well done. I think the removal of the information from the Hawaii NSA base is a good sequence as well, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, and that's you know another thing I was getting at with that question. I mean, to make transferring files and to make you know leaking information into something that. Can be engaging in the cinematic way,
mm-hmm.
I think is something tough to do.
Very much, yeah.
And just wanted to know how you felt about kind of how both of these movies handled it.
I think it's mostly good. Like, I don't know. I people always talk about that, but I never feel like any movie where people are talking about like are you getting bored just looking at these computer screens? It's something like The Social Network, or I mean Jason Bourne's a recent example. But I just never feel like I've gotten bored, like because people are so aware of how boring that this could be that they make it move as quickly as possible, right? Like something that happens in Snowden that I don't think is accurate for how it would happen in real life is when he starts transferring all those files and all of those windows pop up saying for each specific transfer, like how long it would take. I feel like it would just be like one saying your transfer will take this long, you know. Seems like how modern computing works.
Well, and especially people who are so good at it, like that might be what it looks like when I try to transfer a bunch of files. But these are people who are much more intelligent than I am and used to using computers much more than I am.
Yeah, exactly. And it just the way that pops up is just this visually engaging sort of way to make that sequence more interesting. And it's a simple thing, like obviously that's what a file transfer looks like. It's just weird that all of those separate windows have popped up, but I would be lying if I said it made the sequence less engaging. You know, it would be less engaging if they had chosen to just have the one thing saying transfer taking this long, because that bar would move way slower, and since he's transferring so many small files, like those windows are closing really quickly too, you know. So
yeah, that's another part of the movie that I actually thought worked well. I mean, we don't, you know, you talk about Bourne, we see people working within these, you know, these shadowy government agencies and stuff. I thought just some of the really mundane stuff of him going to work inside the intelligence community and going through security and working in these kind of glass-walled rooms, I thought seeing someone like in a role like that, not just depicted as this really nefarious villain, I thought was kind of good and new and fresh. And I thought those were kind of limited parts of the movies that of the movie that I thought was kind of new and enjoyable, and parts where I was, you know, really locked in, even if nothing really engaging was happening, I thought I was still locked into those scenes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I think is a key element of the story that they even could have gone further with, which I mean would involve toning back the set design, but that these very important things are happening in offices that probably don't look that different from the government cubicle your friend currently works in, you know, like and that's something that I do find interesting. And I think I bet they stylized the hell out of that office.
Snowden, I think, said that it's not nearly that glamorous. Okay. It always is way cheaper than that.
Yeah. Because, that is a thing that I think would help the public realize more how weird this is that it's an office environment just like yours, but you're just able to see everything, you know, like all this digital transmission, you know?
Yeah, and it has...
Because it would normalize things, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, that's, I think, something, you know, when they talk about the Nuremberg trials, it comes to mind is the, when they discuss Nazis, is the banality of evil. Just, there's someone who worked at concentration camps who just saw these numbers and just, you know, plugged these, you know, just did data entry. And, you know, it's not always... these scheming faces twirling their mustaches. It's just the most boring, bland thing. And I think that that comes through in some of those sequences. And I think maybe could have stand to have a little bit more of that. And it's weird to say that. It's, oh, I thought that was so boring. Let's get more of that. But I think that's where kind of some of the strength lies.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think that this movie, you know, Snowden and Citizen 4, both of them, have some... I don't know the right word for it, kind of some duty to show the other side of this? I mean, I think Citizen 4 and Snowden both show that Snowden, in the opinion of the filmmakers, was a patriot and was very brave and did the right thing. Do you think that they have a responsibility to kind of show some of the nuances of that argument? Or do you think that they did?
I would say that they... like did in a very surficial way in each film's case. But I don't think they have to. And like, it's weird, right? Cause I mean, in the case of documentary and I guess Oliver Stone's a good example for this in narrative film. In the case of documentary, I've talked about like Michael Moore movies and Bill Maher's Religulous, where the thing that drives me crazy about those types of movies is when, the filmmaker doesn't give the other side a chance to answer the question. And maybe that's because those movies are kind of more direct address from the director that I don't feel this way about Laura Poitras's Citizen 4. Just because it feels like the filmmaker is more removed from the process, that it doesn't feel like she has to also, you know, try and get in Obama's head and his administration and be like, well, this is where we're coming from, you know? I think that... they don't have a responsibility to. They just have to kind of make it feel like the people behind the movie are willing to consider that there are reasons for these things. You know what I mean? Like, or at least in Poitras's case, I feel like Stone has less of an obligation to do these things just because narrative film just typically is more pointed than documentary when you're making something about a real life subject, at least. So I don't know. I don't feel like she has an obligation to do it, but I feel like watching the movie is like a representation of her, obviously, and watching the movie, it feels like you'd be able to have a conversation with her where she's willing to concede a couple of things, you know? Like, it's not like she 100% believes everything Edward Snowden says. She's definitely on his side, but I don't know. It just feels like a film made by somebody that understands that this is still something in flux, you know?
Yeah, there's a spectrum and there's shades of gray. And it's not black and white, government evil, Snowden great.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I feel like I just keep explaining things so abstractly without giving any any real, like, hard answers. But I don't know. I guess that's kind of the place that the story is in right now, too, right? Like, it's just hard to find a hard answer to anything.
Yeah, well, I feel like in the real world, the story is... far from finished. I mean, just the fact that he's still alive, still doesn't seem to be living in the place where he's going to live his whole life, that so much is up in the air.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, on that note, we have in Snowden, we have Edward kind of starting as you said, sort of a more classically conservative, you know, capital T patriotic kind of person. So what do you make of his transition in this? I mean, does it seem like he kind of moves over to his lefty girlfriend throughout the movie and he starts as a bad person and sees the light and turns good? Or where does that, does he move at all along the spectrum? I'm just interested to see what you think about his, whether or not we're supposed to agree and relate with him at the beginning and the end, and if he's a different person before and after.
I mean, I think if anything, people would relate to him, like people that are actually going to see Snowden would relate to him the least at the beginning, just because there is a real, like,
he wants to be in the military.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think a lot of people that went to see Snowden were like people that wanted to be in the military.
I wish I could be in Special Forces. Yeah. I broke my legs getting out of bed.
So yeah, it's just I think that arc is generally handled well, and it's just from a screenplay perspective, but it's just the actual execution of it doesn't work for me as well as it should. But I think that is a, I don't know, that feels like something that would happen in that Lindsay starts to sway him a little bit, but he does sort of come to a lot of conclusions on his own too, right? Like the big conclusions are still things he finds out for himself, and
yeah,
more often than not, they're things that she has no idea about.
Yeah, she knows so little. It's not like she's turning him, you know, kind of putting the flashlight on these things for him and then him changing.
Exactly.
As a result.
If anything, Lindsay is more of a caricature than anybody, you know, like she's just this bleeding heart liberal. She's like, just feels like how Shailene Woodley feels in real life when she's being interviewed, you know, just like she's walking up and she's like, oh, sure, I'll sign a petition. Why not? Boo Bush, you know? Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely not going to read this petition, but here's my signature.
Yeah. Is it sort of, you know, like the Bourne series from the beginning to end is, it's an immediate post 9/11 reaction. You know, the way that Snowden says he wants to join the military pretty much as a result of 9/11. He spells it out pretty plainly in those interviews, which I really like the interview sequences, by the way. I just like hearing the interview questions, whether they're what they actually are or not. But is it sort of the post 9/11 knee-jerk reaction, my country's under attack, I want to be patriotic, and then as you learn more about the ways that the government reacted, you realize that's not the path, perhaps, that truly does, you know...
Yeah, exactly.
...protect humanity in a meaningful way and is more a selfish... I mean, the way that he looks at Corbyn.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like you've got to look at how old he is in these sequences too, right? Like at the beginning of the movie, Snowden's probably 20, right? Like
fresh out of college probably.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's just a very formative age in your life, and you still believe a lot of things that you will come to see as idiotic at some point. So, I mean, his age is important. I know I'm going full Steve Hyden right here, but like it matters, you know? Like it matters to how you see the world, in that he has a very youthfully ignorant view of his country at the beginning, and you know, over the course of your 20s you sort of start to become solidified as the adult you're gonna be, and that's kind of the arc that we're watching with Edward Snowden, and so I think it's handled pretty well, you know, like he's still a person in flux, so his opinions will change with time, you know?
Yeah, and I think one good moment that this movie portrays of, you know, just what we were talking about of kind of doing the right thing versus feeling comfortable. I mean, that's the big change off that they talk a lot about in Citizen 4 is, oh, and Snowden as well, but wanting to be safe, but privacy, you know, privacy versus freedom. And I think that it's done really well in Snowden when Corbyn says, no, your girlfriend's definitely not cheating on you with her photographer friend.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's that's so good to know, but the fact that you know that means you know so much. And I think that was a nice little kind of cartoony but still successful encapsulation of the powers of surveillance.
Yeah, exactly, you know? And that's a real, like, that's the thing that would never happen in something like Citizen 4. Like, it would be crazy, right? Like, it's a real... Yeah, exactly. It's a real dramatic license moment, but it does work, you know? I would agree with that.
With fake Tom Hardy.
Fake Tom Hardy.
We haven't actually talked about the acting at all in Snowden.
No.
I mean, you opened with a bit of acting of your own.
Yeah, yeah. Noted performer, Alex of the movie. Yeah.
How do you think this movie is played?
I mean, okay, well, we'll just start with the obvious one. Joseph Gordon-Levitt sucks. like,
if that's the point,
he's just not good. And I think I'm not anymore. I think I'm done.
Is this it?
Well,
this
it's like, because like, obviously, I've thought a lot about his career. Because for you, I mean, starting with Brick was the first movie I saw in his sort of like I'm the indie wonder kid phase of his career, where he did a lot of really small, really cool movies, and is almost uniformly amazing. And like the ending of that phase seems to be 500 Days of Summer, which is 2009, and then Inception is 2010, and really sort of feels like the beginning of him trying to transition into being more of a Hollywood actor. That's when he starts putting on his like I'm a man voice, like starts talking with a deeper voice. And and you just sort of look at his choices. He's just chosen more lead roles in bigger movies, and I mean also he's been working to get to the point where people would select him for those roles. And he's just like, I mean, you've talked about most directing. He's kind of most acting in a lot of them. And, you know, I saw The Walk last year because I'm kind of interested in Robert Zemeckis movies, even though I hate most of them. And he's terrible in that. And he does
most acting.
Yeah, exactly. He does a stupid voice in that movie. And obviously there's this one. And there's one more that he's got a stupid. I'm going to look it up real quick right now where he does a stupid voice outside of the stupid voice that he normally does just in conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think the voice in this one is, it's good, but it's too far by at least a factor of five.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you hear him speak, and then you hear Snowden speak in Citizen Four, and you say, oh, okay, I see what you're going for.
Yeah.
But he leans on it so hard.
Exactly. Like, and the other movie... Sorry?
He just overdoes it.
Yeah.
You see the intention, but it's just too much.
And the other movie I was thinking of is Don John, which is, in fairness, a movie I liked, but it's a movie where he goes a little too far with the dumb voice. And Looper, he's got a role that requires him putting on a voice. That's a movie I like a lot. But yeah, exactly. He's impersonating Bruce Willis.
To do a voice and eyebrows.
Yeah. And that works. And it's not like I'm saying that I'm totally out on him. Like, I think... I mean, he's great in 50-50. That was 2011. Premium Rush is super fun. We're both on board there. You know, like, and The Night Before. He's really good in The Night Before. And those are just movies that sort of play to his strengths when he just gets to be natural on camera. Like, I think the moment where the real Joseph Gordon-Levitt shines through in this movie is when Lindsay's asking him to, like, do a strut or whatever.
Oh, no.
What?
Like the catwalk.
Yeah, it's so goofy, and but it's also, like, that's the Joseph Gordon-Levitt that I like. Like, the very, like...
Three-quarter of a second pose face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, he's just a funny, charming person, you know? Yeah. And he's just so... He seems so obsessed with being seen as, like, a serious man now that it's just... It's kind of annoying, and the voice is the best example of that. It's, like, it was just such a misguided decision because... Nobody would have come out of that movie if he just talked like Joseph Gordon-Levitt talked and be like, I don't know, man, he didn't sound like Edward Snowden. That movie's a piece of shit, you know? And it's like Snowden also has a mole on his neck. You know, he didn't get that mole. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's just an illogical perspective to have about what people expect from you playing a real life person. And
kind of impression versus building a character thing you've talked about.
Yeah, exactly. Because this movie is not an accurate reflection of reality, just in that it's been put through the Oliver Stone filter. So you should be able to put Edward Snowden through the Joseph Gordon-Levitt filter as well, right? And it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So poor him.
So by putting it through the Joseph Gordon-Levitt, every time he's in the hallway of the hotel, it should be rotating.
Exactly. I mean, that's the high point of his career to me, is that one scene. So. Although he's not super important to that scene, but that could have been anybody.
Question for you. Nicolas Cage, underused?
I loved that Nicolas Cage was in this movie in a supporting role, because he almost never does supporting roles. And I just think that, I think that's a great... great place for him to be as he ages. Like, I really look forward to... hopefully him realizing that, like, yeah, that was kind of cool to be a supporting role, and him sort of aging into the new Christopher Walken as Christopher Walken dies, you know, like, just this really fun supporting character actor who's just so, I don't know, he's like, he's just got an energy that nobody else has, you know?
But it's so small. Like, I don't mean the size of his role, but he doesn't get to go big, doesn't get to have a lot of fun, don't you want?
I mean, I also want him to still be the lead in movies, but, And I mean, he wouldn't have taken such a small role if he didn't like Oliver Stone, you know, because they worked together on World Trade Center. But yeah, yeah, I mean, I would imagine supporting roles in the future, he will have bigger supporting roles. But I don't know. I think seeing Nicolas Cage in small portions is good, you know. And this is coming from a Nicolas Cage super fan. I still think he's a very good actor, you know. And I know that is not the, the common opinion of him. But
Well, I think that common opinion would be helped by him in small doses.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right, like, you can pretty easily imagine a scenario where he sort of transitions into the supporting actor and then, like, really late in life wins another Oscar for Best Supporting Actor and people give him a huge standing ovation, you know? Like, that's not hard to imagine.
Yeah. Just get that Drive Angry sequel.
Drive Angry 5D is what they're up to by that point.
Were you surprised to hear If You're Ready, Come Get It in Citizen 4?
That I remember because I saw that when it played at the Lightbox at TIFF when it first came out, and I laughed out loud when I heard it. I loved it, and I was like curious to, because it's not evident that it's on the TV immediately. Like, you can hear it before you can see the source, and it's like, is it coming from his laptop speakers? But he just has music videos on, and I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I know. I guess he just left MTV on or something, but it was very, very odd when I first heard it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to talk about the one, the another moment in Snowden that I actually really liked is when Snowden is leaving his hotel room and the hallway, which we have seen.
Stationary hallway.
Yeah, which we have seen in Citizen 4, like the representation of it in Snowden is actually fairly accurate. There's just mirrors everywhere. You know, it seems like they've really compressed the space in the Snowden equivalent of it. But I just thought that was a really engaging shot as far as like all of the reflections of yourself that exist in the world and these things that people have access to so quickly if they have the proper clearance, or even in some cases if they don't. But like, I just thought that was a really interesting shot to sort of show Snowden in, you know. Just it was cool, like he's one man, but there are so many different reflections of him out there, you know.
Yeah, and someone who has so many people have such varying opinions about him too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And as we said earlier, it's still very much up in the air about the way people are going to think about him.
Yeah.
He said something interesting there about the clearance. I mean, I think him talking about, and this is in Citizen 4, his role kind of gives him an entirely different level of clearance, you know, because he's an administrator. He kind of has access to everything. I mean, things that he doesn't really need to know for his job, but has to see in the nature of his job, I thought was a nice kind of thematic thing about everything being out there.
Yeah.
And this movie, I mean, mentioning Bourne again for the fifth time probably between us, it's always just to see people in these roles just so high up and using just that kind of language that the government uses, seeing Dagger Complex is the name of one of the buildings for. It's just to have someone who has been through it all and to the just the vast amount of knowledge he has, and he's such an intelligent person no matter what you think of his politics. You know, it kind of ties into what we were saying earlier about just these are day jobs for people. This is just what they do.
Yeah.
I think these movies just show, do a good job of showing that, and, you know, and just, you know, your 9-to-5 being something with these huge historical implications. And that's, I think, one of the strengths of Citizen 4 as well, is when they're deciding what to release and how to release it. And they've got all this time and they're just sitting and it's three or four people in a room, you know, discussing these things kind of casually, but these are things, as I said, with just extreme historical significance. And the documentary doesn't show that much of him, you know, collecting this information, but it shows this very interesting time historically where he has all this information and he's ready to release it, but hasn't done so yet.
Yeah.
And just, you know, them devising a plan, you know, the X's and O's of how they're going to do this very, you know, world-changing kind of thing, I think is the strength of Citizen 4 for me.
Yeah, for sure, and especially coming on the heels of, like, obviously, I mean, I guess I'm I don't know if he's ever said this, but I would imagine that that decision, his decision process, Snowden's, to go through these sort of, this sort of process was probably inspired by WikiLeaks, like going against what WikiLeaks kind of did, and for the most part. And
to be more kind of careful about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it. Yeah, I definitely like the all of the discussions. I mean, you know, I just enjoy talking about journalism in existing in movies of any capacity, and the importance of checking these things, you know, and doing your fact checking and stuff like that. So yeah, all of that stuff is very fascinating to me, and I think it's cool. And obviously there are going to be problems no matter what, like no matter which way Snowden chose to release this information, there would have been some screw ups, some hiccups.
Yeah.
And there were in the way that he did release them. But I don't know. I just thought that the depiction of how they went about it was really fascinating.
Yeah, and I think one of the kind of takeaway moments for me with Citizen 4 is when he's breaking down, you know, just the number of servers and how much data, and Glenn Greenwald kind of says it. It's, you know, this is paraphrasing, but it's something people kind of generally know what's going on, but somehow seeing the mechanics of it and actually hearing the numbers, you know, even if it's exactly what you would have guessed or slightly more, or slightly less. It's, you know, that's the really, he uses the term chilling, which I think is accurate, but that's the really jarring thing is when it's really spelled out plainly. And I think that's what Citizen 4 does, and kind of some of those quiet small moments in the room, when whether it's discussing the apparatus to collect all this information and to look at it retroactively, I mean, they say it's not as though they're using these flimsy pieces of evidence to look into somebody's life. It's, we're looking at everybody's life all the time, and then we can always go back and look at it. You know, it's the structural kind of stuff like that. And you know, I think that's part of the strength of that sequence we discussed in Snowden as well, when the kind of three connections scene, as we said, you know, you kind of see these lines drawn, and to have it put out there in this really plain, tangible, understandable way, even if it's something that you kind of understood in an abstract sense, to have the specificity, I think, drives the point home. And I think that's what these movies kind of serve to do.
Yeah, I would agree.
Anything else about Snowden and Citizen 4?
I don't think so. I don't know. You got anything?
That's it for me.
Thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check back next week when we'll be talking about something else.
Thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.